This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us for our Encore edition, featuring the best of our past few shows. Let the conversations begin. This fall, Chattanooga Design Studio and the Bessie Smith Cultural Center partnered with architecture students from the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. The students examined the Bessie and the African-American history of ML King Boulevard, developing architectural and urban design solutions for the building and its block, proposing new programs and uses for the site. This evening, an exhibition at the Bessie from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. will showcase their work. Eric Myers is Executive Director of Chattanooga Design Studio. Paula Wilkes is President of the Bessie Smith Cultural Center, and Elijah Cameron is Director of Community Relations at the Bessie. Paula, Elijah, Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So tell us more about this presentation that's coming up.
We were approached by Eric and the Chattanooga Design Studio with this project of the UTK architecture students wanting to, as part of their coursework for this semester, redesign the Bessie Smith Cultural Center. So when they approached us, we were extremely excited about this project that's been going on for the last couple of months.
And what is the need for a redesign besides the purposes of this project for the students?
We had just finished a visioning process with the Bessie, and we'll be starting a strategic planning process. So this is just came at a time for us that kind of gives us some ideas to see how we can grow as far as the building goes to meet our needs that we currently have for our programming.
And how long has the building been around in its current location?
The building's been there for quite some time. We've been in the building prior to the Bessie being there. It was owned by the Times Free Press and was a storage facility. And then we've been in that location since the 80s.
Many things have changed around Chattanooga over the past 30 to 35 years, Eric.
Absolutely. And I'm really proud of the students. They've really dug in this semester and looked at the history of ML King Boulevard as the Big Nine, its legacy with a thriving entertainment district, and what the Bessie has meant in recent history on the boulevard. And they really challenged themselves to understand that living history that we have present in our community.
And as you say, it's a living history, so it's summing up what the Bessie has always been about, but doing it in a way that it embraces the future of itself as an institution and that area of Chattanooga and the city as a whole.
That's exactly right. The Chattanooga Design Studio has a legacy with the University of Tennessee architecture program, where our students for years, since 1981 to about 2005, have looked at our community and studied our community, and through their education, we become educated about our city and what the future of our city could look like through their eyes. It's very interesting.
And Elijah, your thoughts on this?
I'm really excited because I got a chance to see some of the designs. And, of course, looking at them is something that will change. You know, we're sitting in the middle of the Innovation District. I've always said that the Bessie was the gateway to downtown. So it gives us an opportunity to see what we can become through the eyes of others and help us to understand what we have as a whole now, right at this present time, and then looking toward the future. So I'm really excited about that.
Getting back to the living history that was talked about earlier, how does their work strike you when it comes to capturing the living history of the Bessie?
Well, actually, you know, I think they did a very good job of that. They interviewed me about the 9th Street thoroughfare, talked to them a little bit about the exciting things that went on, and they've captured that in their work. While we look at the designs and things of that nature, one that stuck in my mind, and I think it stuck in Paula's mind, was the one that had the retail stores with it, the basketball courts and things of that nature. So I think the kids really understood, not being from that era, but understood what it was like to be on 9th Street back in those days.
And this is just another example of the Bessie Smith leaning into the future, if you will, whether pairing with these students and the Chattanooga Design Studio or the Big Nine Roots Festival, or I'm thinking about the pop-up project, mm-hmm. Film Hope.
Yes, all of it ties together, and we are bouncing and doing so many things with the community and pop-up project and others that we're looking to the future, and we realize we're going to need more space to continue to do this programming, to continue to expand and become all that we can at the Bessie, and to be able to portray this history and do it justice.
And this, of course, coming during the holiday season between Thanksgiving and Christmas. This gets the discussion going for the BSEE heading into 2020 and beyond.
Yes, and we're looking for supporters for the BSEE. We're always wanting not just people to visit, financially support, but to be a part of the BSEE and be a partner with us.
And it seems to me it also stands out to people who are just arriving here in Chattanooga or who have been here for a few years that this history does matter.
Exactly. We have to continue to understand that African-American history in any city, but especially here in Chattanooga, is a viable history. It's a living history. And we continue to espouse on that at the BSEE. We want people to understand that when you come to the BSEE, you're going to see Chattanooga African-American history. But we want to tell the story of Chattanooga as a whole. Chattanooga is a very vibrant city. It's a very diverse city. And we want to be able to talk about those things. And with this, with the help of the design studio, I believe that we'll be able to show that in the designs that we're getting now.
And this sort of endeavor goes beyond the BSEE Smith when it comes to Chattanooga.
That's right. The University of Tennessee students have for decades now helped our community envision what could be on parcels of land within our city. And this is a real open call to anyone in our community who has a site where they might need some envisioning work. They might need some future thinking that's innocent, that doesn't really, really jeopardize anything that they have in play, but could just open our community's eyes to what the possible is. Eventually, this work will live on our website in a compendium. It will be referenced in our project side of our website. But tonight at 5 p.m., there will be an open house at the BSEE. It will exhibit the students' work. It will be seven teams of students, and you'll get to meet the students. You'll get to see their inspiring work and their incredible visions for the BSEE.
All right. Eric, Paula, Elijah, thanks so much and all the best.
Thank you.
You too.
At age 53, Jim Fry is what you would call a non-traditional student here on this campus, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Jim arrived here this semester as the Tennessee Board of Regents Outstanding Community College Student of the Year for 2019. And not long after that, the UTC Retirees Association selected him as its first ever scholarship recipient. Jim recently shared what it's like to be back on a campus again. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
And here on this campus, you are a student.
I am. Exciting to be here. I'm a little bit older than the average student, but it's good to be part of such a dynamic crowd of students.
And history is your major, yes?
Yep. Something that I've always been interested in. So is my father. And well, let's face it, I was alive for so much of it. So it's maybe an easier course of study to take.
Tell us how you got to UTC. As you say, you were a non-traditional student.
Well, yes. Many years ago, I was a music major in community college, and that didn't really work out too well for a couple of reasons. One was that my father had gotten sick, but the other thing was it was, you know, sort of expensive and hard to do on your own. So it didn't really work out for me. But then just a few years later, after that, I got married. I've been married for nearly 30 years now. And we started the process of having kids and working and things like that. And so all four kids got their college degrees, bachelor's degrees from different schools. And my oldest son got a degree from RPI up in upstate New York, a degree in physics.
And you're from upstate New York.
Yes, yes. Then my son went to New York City and got a degree in industrial design from Pratt Institute. And my other son got a degree in mechanical engineering. And then my daughter got two degrees, and one in sociology and one in English. And I was at her graduation, it was just a few years ago, where I decided, hey, you know, that's something that I haven't completed. It was like the one bucket list thing that I haven't done. And so as I was sitting there watching all these folks go across the stage, and especially including my daughter, who I was extremely proud of, I decided, you know, I'm going to look into this and see what it would take. I always know that the kids are proud of me, but it was just something that I knew that they'd be excited to see Dad do. It's been, oh my gosh, an amazing journey. And not only did I'm surprised that I did well, because I never really thought of myself as a phenomenal student or anything, but going back with a different set of motivation, knowing that I'm doing it for myself and that I really want to do this.
And after having had a career.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Tell us more about that.
My career started in music. So although I didn't have a degree in music, I still went to work for the church. That was sort of a smooth transition into pastoral ministry. with the help of several bishops and leaders up in the Troy Conference, the United Methodist Church. So I was down here in Tennessee, sort of on a semi-retirement with my wife, empty nesters, as it were. And yeah, so came back and really put myself into doing well in school. And it's been, like I said, an amazing journey. I think it culminated just this past spring, where in Nashville, I was selected amongst all of the community colleges across Tennessee as the outstanding community college student for the state of Tennessee. And so that was really exciting.
You started off over at Chatt State.
Yep.
And because of the scholarship here at UTC, you are now here at UTC.
That, and received several other scholarships. Along with that award from the Tennessee Board of Regents, I received a $5,000 scholarship, part of the Honors College here, and participating in their Innovation and Honors, and received a small scholarship there as well. The money's not all, you know, it's exciting to receive recognition. And I think that's more of what it is, a motivation to keep doing what I'm doing, working as hard as I can to do the best I can.
So what's it like to be in the classroom with students learning about the history, so much of which, as you said earlier, you've lived yourself?
It's really interesting. There's been some interesting times where I'm able to actually revert to my memory of certain events and be able to offer and add into the discussion from memory what it's like to be there and live through that. I think of just recently something like, you know, the Iran-Contra scandal, which I paid attention to. I was a C-SPAN junkie, one of the few. So I was paying attention back in the 80s when C-SPAN first came out, and the 90s, and Bill Clinton, and foreign policy, and things like that. So I'm able to, you know, I still remember those things, and it's exciting to be able to use some of that data bank to put into my assignments.
What kind of conversations do you have with your classmates, many of whom have to be younger than your children, because you talked about your children graduating from college?
Oh, and they are. In fact, some of the group projects that I'm working on with students, it's a different experience. One of the challenges is for instance, when we're all meeting up in the library, I might get a text, and the text would just have three letters, like a W-Y-A, and I have to take a while to figure out what that means. Well, that means, where are you at? I had no idea. So I'm learning. I've still gotten the occasional S-U-P, which is sup.
What parts of history really interest you as a student?
As a student, I'm most fascinated in the time right after the Depression, when FDR comes into office, and we see a time where, first of all, the government really is on the side of the people and is really forced into responding to the people's needs. The New Deal, I know it's controversial for some, but it certainly marks a time in our history when the government was responsive and really forward-thinking in a lot of ways. And the other thing, though, is outside of government, most people, well, I won't say most, but a number of people who lived during the Depression will say that one of the great things about that was that since everybody didn't have much, they shared what they had. And that, to me, is an exciting part of what it means to be the community. And, you know, and as time's gone by, I think over almost 100 years or 80 years, that feeling of community and sharing and caring for one another without judgment has really disappeared a little bit. And I think if you ask some people, now I guess it would be secondhand knowledge, but they'll say that the communities, neighborhoods, neighbors were strong, and it really meant a lot to people to have each other.
However you might think about that sense nationwide, there's a sense around here on this campus and beyond this campus of that community.
Well, there is a community here at UTC, certainly. And it's one that I think where staff and faculty are really committed to the success of the students. And that's really important, especially for adult students who are going back. The Tennessee Board of Regents, along with Governor Haslam, adopted several years ago a program called the Tennessee Reconnect Program, which was part of what was called a Drive to 55, which was encouraging folks to get higher education. And the goal was to have at least 55% of the state have higher education degrees, associate degrees, bachelor degrees. The Tennessee Reconnect Program has helped a lot of people go back to school. I've been working here at UTC, especially with the Student Government Association, to develop a strong pipeline for folks who may attend Chattanooga State and decide that they want to go on and get a bachelor's degree, even if they're non-traditional, or as we call them now, adult learners, to have a smooth transition into UTC, have a community, a campus community, like a club or an organization for adults. And so that this experience can be meaningful and successful for people.
There's the non-traditional, aka adult learners path, as you just mentioned, but also in that Tennessee Reconnect and that push to 55 are first generation students.
Right. I am the first in my family to get a college degree, a higher education degree.
So what's next? How much time do you have to go?
I'm looking forward to graduating in May of 2021. And I've decided that since I'm going to have some time left to return to the workforce, that I'd like to go back to higher education myself and work as an academic advisor, working with other students who are coming into the college experience, whether they're young or whether they're older, and hoping that I can be a part of making that a successful journey for people. I think it's life-changing. I really do. And it's one of the best decisions I think I've ever made outside of getting married and having kids. I think it's one of the best things I've ever done in the last 2 years. I look back at it really fondly, and I look forward to the future with the same amount of excitement.
Sounds like you're already doing it.
Yeah, it's a great thing. I'm really enjoying the history professors here at UTC. These classes are very meaningful, very exciting. So I've described it this way. At Chattanooga State, I learned history. Here at UTC, they're making me into a historian. And that's the way I describe that.
Well, Jim Fry, thanks for coming here, and thanks for being here at UTC, and all the best.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More after our news with Bill McLean. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Earlier, we introduced you to Jim Fry, who, at age 53, is a non-traditional student who recently arrived here at UTC. Bruce Shaw knows what Jim's experience is like. Now 68, Bruce graduated from here last year with a bachelor's degree in integrated studies, combining communications and theater. Bruce, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
You are from here.
Yes.
You are a recent graduate of this institution.
I am. December 2018, class of. It was my third time at UTC attempting to achieve a degree, and actually my fourth time in college. I started at normal college age back about 1969 at Michigan State, but I consolidated transcript about 78 here at UTC during a time I was back in Chattanooga briefly. My degree is Bachelor of Integrated Studies, which I have to plug. That's a wonderful program for folks that have collected experience or know off the bat that the normal structure of even doing something like a double major and a minor or something like that doesn't quite suit their needs. In my case, it was having explored a great many things over the years in terms of learning. So I selected two areas of interest to pursue, actually proposed a third, but that apparently wasn't practical when my advisors discussed it. But the concentrations of the integrated studies degree for me were courses from the communications department, primarily focusing on the skills involved in filmmaking. My other concentration was in theater, where I focused on primarily acting and directing.
It was bringing your experiences in life and learning elsewhere to hear.
Exactly. I guess in a sense, I was seeking to validate or certify what I had explored on my own through experience and bring those into something that I could kind of put on a shelf and point to and say, see, I actually have collected and certified these activities that I've been interested in for so long.
Those experiences, going back to when you were first in college, one thing that drew you elsewhere was musical theater.
That's true. Actually, any form of theater. I have a strong musical bent and a fair background in that I started as a trumpet player in elementary school and picked up guitar when I was about 13 and so forth and so on. Did some classical voice training along the way. Music has always been a big draw for me. It's kind of really the fundamental art that I learned. I also, in high school, became stage struck. So, yes, I've done musical theater. When I was first in university at the Michigan State, which is the point of your question, that's really the reason that I left after a fairly brief period of time there, a couple of years, was because I was a radio and television major, broadcasting major, interestingly enough, have circled back into communications. But I was spending almost all my time in theater, over at the theater department, doing whatever there was to be done and having not a major that I could choose at the time for a variety of reasons. The confluence of music and theater hit two of the buttons that I wanted to integrate at that time, I guess.
And as you say, you brought it around full circle all these years later here at UTC.
Yes, it did. As a matter of fact, I attended, finished up between 2016 and 2018. Prior to that, when I came back to the area to be with my father, who was in ill health, between 2006 or 7, I think I finally registered in 7, and 2008, I was actually, I registered as a music major. My goal at the time was to try and restart a professional acting career. And so I majored in music and at the same time took some theater courses and independent study with Max Motherman to prepare audition material and was prepping specifically for the Southeastern Theater Conference auditions, that circuit, to try and get some professional work. I've studied formally at the university music, didn't complete a minor or anything, but I've got substantial coursework, got a fair way through that curriculum as well.
These days, besides your connection to UTC, you are connected to the theater community here. Ensemble Theater of Chattanooga, Chattanooga Theater Center. You've been part and are part of those.
Yes. I've spent the most time with Ensemble Theater, their particular approach to theater and their selection of material tends to appeal to me most. Kind of a scrappy underdog, build-it-yourself organization that with some tremendous aspirations and some, to my mind, my perception, extraordinary skills that are brought together in that company, and just a die-hard attitude in contrast to a very well-established 100-year-old community theater deeply rooted in this community, providing the fare that the community will accept, as well as pushing the boundaries and making offerings that folks can accept or reject in terms of the material that they like to see performed. As I said, I've spent more time at ETC, and that harks back to when I was first at Michigan State. I worked primarily with companies that wrote their own material. That was our method of operation. I tend to gravitate to ETC in terms of its style and focus.
Let's talk about your work here at UTC. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of Jesse Knowles. Tell us about Jesse Knowles.
Come to think of it, I'm trying to think how I first met Jesse. I think I met her through her parents. They also run the program out at Chatt State, the Professional Actors Training Program. I think I met Jesse through them initially, or it could have been through some, you know, performing connections. One of those deals where you meet a new Facebook friend through an interest group and suddenly you have 60 mutual friends around them. I think that may have been it. I was taking one of Professor Andrews' television production classes. One of our assignments was to come up with a story that involved interviews. I thought of Jessie because she was involved in putting together a one-woman show. Was and is highly personal. She's still touring it and developing the show.
And she talks about her struggles.
She does. She has some diagnosed clinical mental health challenges that are part of her personality and therefore part of her life and work. She has chosen in her theatrical work to make those characteristics and thoughts and experiences the focus of a show. I've seen her one-woman show, had seen it before I chose to do a feature piece on her for the class. It is revelatory to sit and watch someone with that much insight and who has experienced that much struggle that most of us don't touch, at least to the depth that she has, to have as much perspective on it as she has, and even further, to be able to make a whole presentation out of it, complete with the humor and very touching. And it gives the talkback sessions that she does are wonderful in that they give a general audience or other people who may be facing the same issues but have not been able to talk about them much a chance to be among friends is the atmosphere that she manages to produce. So in my opinion, the talkback sessions that she does after presenting the show are an extremely valuable part of the overall performance and her outreach. As I got into the story, I started off with the idea of interviewing Jessie, and her story in and of itself was remarkable. But in the context of the university and being in the classes and working with my peer group, most of whom are young enough to be my children, had I started earlier, they would be my grandchildren. And from listening to Jessie's personal story, she started really experiencing some of the challenges during her college career. If anyone else in the position that she found herself in, that people with that potential, i.e. college students now, might benefit from hearing her story, having that resonate with them as I'd seen it do in the talkbacks, and then additionally, since I was working for Mox News, for the university organization, that's who it was produced for, to say, all right, well, if I'm in that situation as a student and I start to have difficulties, symptoms that I'm not familiar with and can be quite frightening, where do I go? What do I do? That's where the story ended up once I started exploring it.
I'm curious what it was like for you to navigate the generational divide here on this campus.
It was odd not having a peer group. It seems to me to be foolish, and I've seen other people do it, who at an older age, a parental figure that most of the folks that are normal college age are going to see me as. That's how they'll respond to me just on sight. I was asked all the time whether I was on staff here or not. Frequently, if I showed up in a new class and was one of the early arrivals, they would assume that I was supposed to be teaching the class. But I didn't try and become everybody's buddy. That didn't make any sense. It's crossing a certain kind of boundary that I don't think is appropriate. At the same time, the folks that chose to exercise their curiosity and see what this old guy was about, I really enjoyed the experience. It real stimulating in terms of thinking, listening to these folks, seeing them walk paths emotionally and developmentally that I had walked myself and actually walked through with my son. My son is almost 40 now. I enjoyed that experience very much. At the same time, although they couldn't be a peer group for me, there were many of the faculty that were apparently found it interesting to have me in class, allowed me a fair amount of slack in terms of being generous with their time and discussions, that sort of thing. I'm marked by the experiences with several of the teachers that I've had. They've had a profound effect on my thinking, and I'm very grateful for the experience.
And your work has been recognized.
Yes, it has. That was completely unlooked for, and it was an example of one of my professors, without my knowing it, promoting a piece of my work, the story that we were talking about earlier that I produced for the TV production class, and Professor Andrews, although he's adjunct faculty, I guess, but I call all those folks, Professor Andrews in the communication department that also runs all of the video production for UTC at this point, was the professor and the teacher for that class, without my knowing it, submitted it to the AP Awards, the piece on Jessie, the tie-ins with the mental health support available here at UTC for the students. And he submitted it, and he's also hired me occasionally for some voiceover work. He seems to think that that's something that I do well enough to be used. On one of those phone calls one day, he said, oh, by the way, you won an award. What? That was actually the top of this year someplace. It was an award for 2018, awarded in 2019, I guess. Turns out that he normally submits in multiple categories, kind of like the Emmys or the Oscars, I guess. The Associated Press has a collegiate division, and he had submitted that piece to the Tennessee Associated Press, and won an award in one of the categories, and I was just flabbergasted.
So what's next?
I've been trying to answer that question ever since I graduated in some ways. As you can tell, I have a bunch of interests and have experience in exploring four or five of them. And so, as indicated by an integrated studies, I'm looking to piece all that together, and where do I apply this collection of skills and interests that I've gathered. And I'm also committed to this area. I am married to a wonderful woman here, have family by marriage in the area, and am not inclined to go running around the countryside trying to build a career, you know, go national. I'm not that ambitious anymore, certainly. And so now would be a good time for me to make a concerted resume. Here I am, hi, I'm stepping into the world, push with the local, particularly television stations. I'd love to be producing something like Well, every once in a while on the noon shows on the various television stations, they'll produce features similar to something, the features on CBS This Morning, or some of the things that you'll see in TCI, like Southern Accents, those kinds of feature stories. Those kinds of stories of that character appeal to me to do. My challenge right now is to see if any of these organizations will take on an apprentice, a 68-year-old apprentice with ambitions to do this kind of work. That's a little startling, I would imagine, for many of the people who are used to seeing interns come in at the ripe old age of 20, you know, 19, 20, something like that.
Well, Bruce, I want to thank you for sharing your story here, and I wish you all the best in whatever storytelling you do behind and in front of the camera, on stage, you name it.
Thanks, sir. I really appreciate it. All encouragement gratefully accepted.
If you have seen Zachary Cross around Chattanooga, chances are you have seen him hopping around on a pogo stick. Zachary is a sophomore here at UTC, and 2 years ago, he set a new world record, completing a mile on pogo in 9 minutes, 35 seconds. His feat was beat the next week, but as Zachary told me, he aims to reclaim the title. Zachary, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
When was the first time you got on a pogo stick?
I probably would have been around 7 or 8 years old, just at my friend's house down the street.
What was that like? Do you remember?
It was just fun. You know, we'd be hanging out, playing outside, doing the normal things, and pogo stick was just one of those toys you play around with here and there.
And you've been playing around with pogo sticks ever since?
Well, I think that was kind of the beginning, and that it was just kind of there, and then, you know, disappeared for a while, and then only like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, noticed pogo sticks again, and then kind of picked it back up.
And you really picked it back up all the way to earning a record along the way.
That's right. Yeah, once I picked it up, it just became fun to see how far I could take everything.
And tell us about the record.
April of 2017, about a year after I really got it back into pogoing, that I went down to the track and recorded the record.
Guinness World Record.
Yes, yes.
And at the moment, you have been surpassed, but you aim to reclaim it.
That's great.
And I watched the interview that you did with the Times Free Press, the footage of you on the pogo stick. When we say pogo stick, there are pogo sticks and there are pogo sticks. You've got something that we would say is more, shall we say, high-end.
A professional pogo stick, yes. Yes. There's a pretty big distinction between the regular toys and what I'm using now. Mostly that's a larger, like, air-powered device. You can do more maintenance on it. It's made to be used all the time.
And that kind of stick, that's, we're talking several hundred dollars.
Yeah, it's about $400, yeah.
But you can probably also take it places that you couldn't take standard pogo stick.
It's a whole other paradigm, kind of, yeah.
And that pogo stick looks really geared for terrain, for the outdoors. Where do you take this pogo stick around Chattanooga?
For me, I usually just go around the way I would, like on a run. So just down the sidewalk, around downtown, across the bridges, just everything. But for me, I just keep it pretty much just like running. So I'm just staying on flat terrain and seeing how far I can go usually.
And it's all about endurance.
Yeah, for me, it's all about endurance. The more normal thing with a pogo stick is more of an X Games sport and, you know, doing flips and other tricks that you see.
What's it like using the pogo stick around Chattanooga and the looks that you might get from people? Or are you doing it so much that people who might pass you by, they recognize you and they go, oh, it's him again?
It seems like there's always a lot of new people when I go out, and there's probably some repeats, you know, eventually. But it's cool. It seems like usually people are surprised, and then they think it's really cool, and they a lot of times cheer me on. So it's always really fun.
You have anybody following you around on a pogo stick?
Not really. No. I'm pretty much the only one out there, yeah.
Anybody want you to give them lessons?
I have not had that happen yet. Most people are too scared to try it, but sometimes I'll stop and let people try it, and they, you know, do that for a minute or two, and it's fun.
And what's it like when they try?
A lot of them can do it just fine. They'll do it for maybe 5 or 10 seconds, and okay, that's exciting enough for them, and then I go on my way.
Maybe they feel they don't want to push their luck beyond 5 or 10 seconds.
Exactly. And that's fine. That's how I started when I first started on it. It's pretty scary to start on that. The pogo stick I'm using is, you have a really big step up to get onto the stick, and so it's very intimidating when you start out, and then you kind of build up that experience.
So besides reclaiming the record down the road, what other plans might you have with a pogo stick?
Really, I'm pretty content just to be riding it around the city. I'm always hoping to do that more. Right now, I get out maybe once every week or two. It'd be fun to make it at sort of 3 times a week sort of thing.
And are there times of the year that you can't or don't use the pogo stick?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot harder once it gets really cold. And because the pogo stick is full of air, the really cold weather will make that. It can cause the pogo stick to lose air faster. And then during the summer, because it's such a strenuous exercise, summer heat makes it pretty difficult. So I'm definitely always working around the seasons and always looking forward to fall and spring.
You've got still quite a window left for this fall and the pogo stick this fall.
Absolutely. I'm really enjoying the season and the weather right now.
All right. Zachary, thanks so much.
Yeah.
You're listening to Scenic Routes on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Routes. Our show is produced by Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, and Will Davis from the studios of WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Follow us on Twitter at scenicroutes423. And email us at scenicroutes423@gmail.com. Also, follow WUTC on Facebook and Instagram, and listen online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. Join us again next time for Scenic Routes.